And we continue at 2:05 in the afternoon. Talk Radio 790 KABC, the John Phillips Show, broadcasting live from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studios. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
Well, John, it took almost 3 weeks, but police have finally arrested the Tesla road rage driver who was bashing everybody's cars. And shocker, he's got a record.
What kind of record?
An extensive criminal record that includes stalking and making threats.
And I would imagine some anger management problems.
Yes. How he could afford that Tesla remains a mystery.
My guess is he stole it.
It's possible.
You know, if he knows his way around town with a baseball bat, like I think he does, why not just go clean and play for the Angels? Because we could use another bat in our lineup. 800-222-KABC is the telephone number, 1-800-222-5222. It is our pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. He is a nationally syndicated columnist and author of the book, America's Expiration Date, The Fall of Empires and Superpowers, and the Future of the United States, available online at Amazon.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Cal Thomas. Cal Thomas, welcome.
Well, thank you, John. And I've got a record, too, by the way, but it's an LP. And by the way, what are you still doing in California? You need to come to Florida, pay your wealth tax, come to Florida, get an immediate pay raise with no state tax, a great governor who's against critical race theory, doing all the right stuff. And we've got a climate that's just as good as California, and our oranges aren't bad either.
You know, Cal, I'm in an abusive relationship with my state. They hurt me because they love me.
Yeah. Well, I got to talk about a new Gallup poll that just came out, which is really interesting. This is my Thursday column. It's found that the number one issue for people is big government, which they're against. Republicans and Republican-leaning independents by 24%. And surprisingly, Democrats and Democrat-leading independents, 18%, are concerned about the growth of big government. But, of course, the left says, well, yeah, you say that, but then when you need something, you call on us. I think it's time to revisit some of Ronald Reagan's great quips about big government, one of which was, we who live in a free market society believe that growth, prosperity, and ultimately human fulfillment are created from the bottom up, not the government down. That's pretty good, isn't it?
It is. And I'll tell you, this is something that's in our DNA as Americans. We are a nation that was birthed from a distrust in government. And you see elements of that in both political parties. The differences are that Republicans hate different parts of government than Democrats. We are very suspicious of the IRS. We're suspicious of the EPA. We're suspicious of the Department of Education. And they hate the cops and the military. It's just different branches of the government they don't like.
That's a great point. And, you know, the founders wanted government to be limited so the people would be unlimited. The problem is today that we've fallen in, a whole generation now, younger people especially, but also increasingly middle-aged people, into an entitlement mentality. I'm entitled to other people's money. No, I'm entitled to liberty, and the rest is up to me. Government should be a last resort, not a first resource. Or as Reagan again famously said, I hope we once again have reminded people that man is not free unless government is limited. There's a clear cause and effect here that is as neat and predictable as a law of physics. As government expands, liberty contracts.
Let's talk about that in the context of the emerging race for the Republican nomination for president in 2024. One of the things that I liked about Donald Trump back in 2016 was that he was an outsider and he didn't have to play by the same rules as everyone else, in the sense that the Chamber of Commerce could lean on him to take a certain position on immigration. He didn't have to be an open borders candidate. He could run as an immigration hawk, which is where the voters were in that particular primary. And could do so without the Chamber of Commerce being able to punish him in any real sort of way. However, as an outsider, when he was elected to office, he didn't really understand how the government worked. And the people around him weren't necessarily on the same page as him, primarily people like Jared and Ivanka and Reince Priebus and others. And they would use the executive branch against his own policies and trying to stand in the way of enacting the policies that he supported. Ron DeSantis, on the other hand, governor of Florida, the man you just referenced, is a guy who really does understand the administrative state. And as you also indicated, today he made some headlines. According to CNN, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said today that he intends to ban state universities from spending money on diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives and will hope they will, quote, wither on the vine without funding. Here's a direct quote from DeSantis. He said, "It really serves as an ideological filter, a political filter," end quote. He's not just talking about doing these things. He knows how to use the power of government to enact his agenda. How important is that?
Yeah. Yes, well, everybody cares for their kids, or should. And this is what catapulted Governor Youngkin in Virginia to the governorship there in what was trending toward a blue state. He used the outrageous behavior of school boards in the state, which were allowing for all kinds of things without parental knowledge or consent, and he rode that to victory. I think the issue of school choice, I think that if DeSantis and other Republicans reach out to minority parents, poor parents in major cities who want their kids to get a good education and who wants their kid to get a bad education, and offer them the school choice that is now spreading through the country, this is a winning issue. But there are so many things. There's not going to be one person who's going to be able to heal America. We're not going to have some, I think it was Chuck Colson who said, the kingdom of God is not going to arrive aboard Air Force One. It was a great line. You've got to lead the people to where they need to be. We need a Moses type. We need somebody to say, you know, let my people go from this prison of big government, high taxes, $31 trillion debt. We can't go on like this. Come to your senses. Think about what our forebears created. Think about what our parents or grandparents or great-grandparents fought for in World War II and how they survived the Great Depression. Think about these values. They have to be renewed in every generation. They're not automatic. And that's the kind of leadership I think we need, and more Americans will follow that kind of leadership. The problem with Trump, as we talked about this before, he was right on the policies, but every time some success came out, he would step on his own success by trashing somebody like Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer, and that became the headline instead of focusing on the successes, whether it's the border, whether it's tax cuts, or whatever it is. So, I don't think they're after Trump. I mean, you got Georgia, you got a newly impaneled grand jury down there that probably is going to issue some kind of an indictment, I would imagine, just guessing, on his alleged attempt to overthrow the election results in Georgia. You got the New York City Attorney General who is after him for allegedly inflating his business value, his value of his businesses, in order to get tax breaks and loan reductions, interest rates. So I don't think he's out of the woods on that. But yeah, I agree with Nikki Haley, who said the other day, we need a new generation of leaders, like JFK, who said the torch has been passed to a new generation.
Let's shift gears for a second and talk about the U.S. Senate seat here in California. Dianne Feinstein is up in 2024 should she decide to run for re-election. She says she hasn't made up her mind yet, but will do so at some point this spring. It's not uncommon for politicians in the other political party to announce that they're running against an incumbent of the opposing party, trying to take that seat away from them. However, it is typically uncommon for multiple elected members of the same political party as the sitting member to announce that they are running for the seat, even before that member has announced their intentions. We know that Dianne Feinstein is the oldest member of the U.S. Senate at 89. But still, the Senate is a little bit different than other elected bodies, where things like seniority matter, things like respect and decorum are supposed to be part of the program. They're standing in line to kick this woman. Why do you think they're being so disrespectful to her? And what does this tell you about where we're headed?
Well, ambition, of course. Pride goes before the fall, says the scripture. But ambition is very strong. You got Adam Schiff now, who after his failure in the House of Representatives, now I guess wants to fail in the Senate. So he's going to run. I think most people, they don't want to talk about it, but most people realize that Dianne Feinstein is past her sell-by date. I mean, she has clear cognitive issues, as does Joe Biden. Now, Biden usually takes a physical exam in January. He hasn't taken one yet, and the White House won't answer any questions about when he intends to take one. Remember, during the 2020 campaign, he was asked directly by a reporter, and somebody should ask Feinstein this as well, have you ever taken a cognitive test? And Biden said, oh, sure, I'm tested all the time. But the follow-up question should have been, but wasn't, when can we see the results? And clearly, the man has got cognitive issues. If you saw him in the White House the other day with Dr. Jill leading him around, he doesn't know where he's going. He's looking both directions. She's making little comments to cut off questions coming from reporters.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
I mean, this is an embarrassment. And so I think you've got the same problem there. You had it with Strom Thurmond, too, who at one time was the oldest senator in the Senate. There ought to be term limits for this and other reasons, but unfortunately these characters don't want to give up the power once they have it.
What's your read on Adam Schiff? Because so far, since making the announcement, he's trying to essentially run against Donald Trump for this office. He doesn't talk about his Democratic opponents. He doesn't talk about Dianne Feinstein. He acts as if he's running against Trump.
Well, I think he has absolutely no credibility. I mean, look at all the things he's been wrong about. The Russian collusion thing, the phone call he took that claimed that whoever the caller was, said he had compromising pictures of Trump, and he was very open to it. And the guy has just a really, really bad personality. I don't see what kind of platform he can run on. He doesn't have any record of success. Can anybody name any legislation that he's introduced that has improved the lives of Californians? Maybe he has, but I'm not familiar with it.
What's the read on him in Washington? Is he regarded as a leaker? And I say that because all through the Russia investigation, there were any number of stories that had to come from someone on that committee. He was the chair of the Intelligence Committee at the time. And a lot of that information that was leaked turned out to be wrong. And when the reporters were called out on it, they still wouldn't reveal their sources. It was frequently reported that many people in D.C. thought that Adam Schiff was the leaker. What's your read on that?
Yeah, I think that's probably true, and he is the most likely candidate. And let's not forget that James Baker, the former White House aide to Ronald Reagan and later Secretary of State, was known as a big leaker as well. These people leak for two reasons. Number one, for policy reasons, they don't like the policy of the administration. Or number two, to make themselves look better and to ingratiate themselves with the press. They are less likely to get a critical story written about them in the Washington Post or the New York Times if they're leaking secret information to them. So you've got a twofer there, and I think Adam Schiff played that better than a violin.
What do you make of Katie Porter? Because out here in California, She is relatively new to the scene. She represents Orange County in the House of Representatives, but she doesn't act like she represents Orange County. She acts like she represents MSNBC. And within the Democratic caucus here in California, Nancy Pelosi has made no secret of hating Katie Porter with the hot, hot hate of a thousand suns.
Well, golly, if I were a Democrat, that would kind of recommend her to me. I don't know her record, and I've not met her, but you know, one of the ways you can judge whether somebody would be a pretty good candidate is by their opponents. And if Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff and some of these other people don't like her, I'd take a second look at her myself.
Last time you and I talked, we talked about whether or not Nancy Pelosi would stay on as Speaker of the House. As it turns out, she has stepped down as Speaker of the House, or stepped down as Democratic leader. I guess she would be minority leader if she stayed on as the Democratic leader in this Congress. However, she did not resign her seat from Congress. She's still the Congresswoman from San Francisco. She is not giving up the power of being a member of Congress. What do you make of that? And why would you stick around if you're with the leader and now you're just a backbencher?
Well, maybe you can get in first at the hairdresser when everything else is closed. I don't know. You don't make that much money compared to her massive wealth, she and her husband. They keep getting more money all the time when they're selling stocks just before some major event happens within the company in which they hold stocks. They must be clairvoyant. You know, how do you come to Washington and get a salary of between $150,000 and $170,000 a year, or in the case of Fauci, $450,000, and leave a multimillionaire? How do you do that? Nobody's been able to cover that. Whatever happened to real journalism in Washington? When I grew up there and I was a copy boy at NBC in Washington, we had real journalists, people who came out of newspapers and wire services. They were writers. They weren't personalities. They weren't all blondes with short skirts. Back then, before teleprompters, they actually read from scripts that they had written and nobody else had. But all of that's changed, and there's no real journalism anymore. It's all opinion. You look at the New York Times, the Washington Post, they have these sections online that says opinion. It's all opinion. Front page, even sports page. Everything's an opinion. And this is one of the reasons trust in the media it continues to decline, along with Congress.
The attack on her husband was such a strange story, speaking of the decline of the American media, because so many things were reported that were then retracted. It was reported that he knew the assailant, and then that was retracted. It was reported that there was a third person there who opened up the door. That was retracted. It was reported that the individual did not break through the glass and enter that way, that he was allowed into the house. Then that was retracted. Why were there so many aspects of the story that were reported and then pulled back without really much explanation?
Well, going back to, you know, my early days in journalism, you wanted to get it first, but you wanted to get it right. And now nobody worries about getting it right anymore. They just worry about getting it first. Social media, the pressure for ratings, all of these things, I think, contribute to that. I think most decent people were shocked and appalled by this. But there are other elements, too. I mean, the Capitol Police, as you know, had a TV monitor on the place. They didn't respond or ask anybody else to respond in a timely manner. The 911 woman who received the call from Mr. Pelosi delayed in getting help there. The cops showed up, finally, and it was before the suspect allegedly hammered Pelosi in the head. And they were standing there watching this. Why didn't they intervene immediately when they came in the door? So it's just the whole thing is extremely strange to me and doesn't really relate to anything, whether it be the media or the police or 911 people or the Capitol Police. Something weird is going on. I think people are so afraid to make a decision. It was like during the Clinton administration when they had Osama bin Laden in their sights and they couldn't get a decision up the food chain to take him out. So everybody's afraid. This poor teacher in Virginia was shot by a six-year-old kid, of all things. The principal, I believe, has been fired now, but nobody wanted to make a decision. They found that the kid had a gun in the backpack before when he came into the school. But nobody wanted to do anything. They all fear lawsuits. Everybody's afraid of lawyers. This call is being recorded for quality and training purposes. Press 1 for English, you know? It's just nuts. And all of this combines to create what we're seeing now in our country, in our culture.
Well, I just can't imagine that you would have someone who, behind the vice president, is next in line for the presidency. They live in a big city with a lot of crime, and there's no security at the house at all. When you bump into these people in D.C., when you bump into Pelosi or Mitch McConnell or fill in the blank, are they typically without security? Is this something that's common?
Well, I'll tell you, Nancy used to be my next-door neighbor on K Street at a very nice condo in Washington right on the Potomac River. I'd see her every morning when she came out, and I'd say, Nancy, thanks for I never address these people by their titles unless they're the president, because they work for me. I said, you're looking good. Thanks for looking good. So she'd walk out by herself, and her security would be outside, you know, with a big car and the guys with the things in their ears and all that, but she didn't have any inside the building. So I'll tell you a little story. When we moved to another place in Northern Virginia, I saw her at a Christmas party, and she asked me, she said, why did you move? I said, well, we felt we were running down your property values.
Cal Thomas, author of America's Expiration Date, The Fall of Empires and Superpowers, and The Future of the United States, available online in both hardcover and paperback over at Amazon.com. Cal, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
It is my pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. She is a New York Times bestselling author so many times over. You can not only read her books for the entire spring, but you can actually allow them to bleed over into your summer reading as well, and you will learn so much if you do that. You can also subscribe to her Substack over at AnnCoulter.com, where there is a brand new discussion about the police beating in Memphis with the one and only Heather McDonald. You should definitely check that out. She is kind enough to join us this afternoon. Ann Coulter, welcome.
Hello, good to talk to you, John Phillips.
Likewise. Now, before we get to what happened in Memphis, I want to check in with you about your favorite actor, Alec Baldwin, who is now being charged with involuntary manslaughter for shooting that cinematographer on the set over in New Mexico. He went on 2020 with George Stephanopoulos, and he talked and he talked and he talked and he talked and he talked. And I think he talked the DA into filing charges against him for saying things like, I never pulled the trigger.
Well, you're not going to like my answer. I'm totally on Alec Baldwin's side, as I often am, oddly enough. Although, yes, I know he's a liberal blowhard. But usually the things that he's getting in trouble for, he may not realize it, but he's taking the conservative side of a position. And here it's not specifically, I think, liberal conservative, but it is a little, to me, it's common sense, and especially you out there in L.A., if you're an actor on a set and someone hands you a prop, I know all these gunners, and I am a proud gunner myself, will say, oh, whenever you point a gun at something, you must check the ammunition first. You have to never point a gun at something you don't want to destroy. Yeah, in real life, this is a movie set. It's like handing somebody a toy gun. You don't check. And actually, the other point you make is a very good point, and this is something everyone out there should keep in mind. I mean, I've told myself a million times, and I bet you I wouldn't do it if I ever, shot an intruder on my property and the cops came. I would just start blathering to them, and I mean, I feel like I've done nothing wrong. I want to explain what happened. I was afraid this guy's in my house. I told him to stop. I would just start blathering, and I know I'm a lawyer. Weirdly enough. I know, never, ever, ever talk to a cop without your lawyer there. And the reason for that is it isn't that you're guilty of something. It's that you need, in fact, don't talk to anyone involved in law enforcement without your lawyer there. You need a witness for what you had to say. I mean, may, if they're recording the full thing, but they don't have to produce the full, your full interview to the jury. So, you know, suppose I just shot an intruder and it turns out to be someone I know and dislike. And I say, oh, oh my gosh, you know, he's wearing a mask. I couldn't see who it was. I told him stop. He wouldn't stop. Now that you've taken his mask down, yeah, I know that guy. I don't like him at all, but I thought he was a burglar. They could use just the part of I don't like him at all or I hate the guy and not the surrounding context. So anyway, your listeners should keep that in mind. And I think, I'm sorry, I'm on Alec Baldwin's side here.
You know what? I am too, because if you're an actor and you're working on a set, it's a division of labor. You're not a jack of all trades. You're not supposed to do everything on the set. You're not.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
You're not supposed to check the lighting. You're not supposed to check the makeup. You're not supposed to check the hair. You're not supposed to check the props. You're there to memorize your lines and deliver your lines and sell movie tickets. Outside of that, it's someone else's job. And in this particular case, the woman who was in charge of the guns, the armorer, she failed at her job. So if I was on the jury, maybe I'd convict her if the evidence was compelling. But I don't see how you can blame Alec Baldwin for any of this.
Yes, yes, unless you're blaming him for that horrible Trump imitation. Though normally I think he's pretty funny. That really was a perfect example of how you can't be funny about someone you hate.
Well, I'll tell you one good thing that came from all of this. It brought back his wife's fake accent.
Now that I'm with you on.
Here is Hilaria Baldwin with the paparazzi.
I want you guys to realize that we have seven kids. And you being here to escort them to school and to be there when they come home is not good.
She's a white chick from Boston.
And her alleged Spanish background was spending time in Spain. Point one, I don't know if you know this, I spent all my summers growing up in Spain. And yet I don't talk like that. And guess who else doesn't talk like that? The Spaniard. No, this is a Mexican accent. This is a South American accent she's giving. So even the BS excuse is nonsense.
All right, let's shift gears for a second and talk about Memphis, because this story really shows you how the left really doesn't think through a lot of their policies, and they tend to backfire them and blow up in their face like a hillbilly's rifle all the time, but they never make the connection, so they keep doing
right.
it.
Well,
you know, you go back to Tammany Hall, and things like police departments and fire departments and sewage departments, all of those jobs were not civil service jobs. They were political appointees. And
right.
if you did things for the machine took care of you, and they gave you a nice city job. Whether you were 500 pounds and they turned you into a firefighter, didn't matter. Whether you were blind, they'd give you a badge and a gun and make you a police officer, didn't matter. It was just who they owed favors to, and those people got jobs at the city. And then one too many homes burned down because the firefighters were too fat to put out the fire. And one too many people got accidentally shot by the cops, and that turned into a problem. And they decided, okay, we are going to turn this civil service system into a permanent bureaucracy that is apolitical, and whoever gets elected doesn't get to appoint the police department, the fire department. It's based on skill and merit, and with that you get certain job protections, and you can have a good retirement when you're done. Well, now they're trying to change that system again. But they're not trying to change it to turn it back into Tammany Hall. What they want is they want diversity, equity, inclusion. And so instead of sticking with the civil service system that's worked so well for so long, where you have to pass the test to become a firefighter or a police officer, they lowered the educational requirements. They made it so that you could be convicted of a felony and still get a badge and a gun, because they wanted to expand the pool of people who would qualify to become police officers in a place like Memphis. The New York Post has a great piece on this, where two out of those officers would have never been hired under the old system. They would have failed, either because of a lack of education, lack of education, and criminal convictions. And because of the new policies, they were given badges and guns, and guess what? Now the city's going to get sued, and they're in all kinds of trouble. Your thoughts on what's going on in a lot of these big city police departments to try to bring more diversity to the force?
Well, I would say that the diversity regime generally is not really working out for America. At least, you know, with the no-show jobs, or what I felt like we were promised with the diversity jobs, was going to be just, you know, a no-show job. You don't even have to go. You just get paid because you're a black person. You can just stay home, have a chauffeur. Maybe if you show up, you watch TV all day. No, that's not what they're doing at all, John. No, they got a plan for action. And they go about destroying the institution. As for specifically the Memphis cops, I don't know the details. I'm accepting your version of this. I wouldn't care about the educational achievement, not one iota. All you're learning in school is, oh yeah, because of the diversity bureaucrats, you know, what an awful country is and how to perform. But there should be aptitude tests. They should have aptitude tests for every single job under the sun, including busboy, as we know from Charles Murray's The Bell Curve. IQ, 10-minute IQ test is the best job test for any job at all. The criminal record you guys know quite well about from the Rampart scandal, where they, in order to diversify the police force in Los Angeles, they dropped the no criminal record requirement. I mean, it used to be a police officer, you had to be purer than Caesar's wife. There could not be, you know, a drunk driving, which our President Biden doesn't even consider a felony. That's not a serious one. Anyway, you couldn't have the smallest mark on your record. You couldn't hang out with the old high school friends. You're joining a police force. You are now representing the law. Well, that excluded a lot of minorities, so they put the kibosh on those requirements and ended up with a bunch of gang members in the Ramparts force. There was a movie made about it, Denzel Washington in Training Day, which amazingly did not switch the race of the officers as Hollywood is wont to do. Very unfortunately for black actors, in my opinion, because it's the mean and the bad characters who are always the funnest to play, and they're definitely the most memorable and exciting. But no, all black actors now have to be playing you know, the sainted judge, the sainted cop, the sainted, oh, what a bore that would be. Sorry, that was just a little diversion into how Hollywood is wrecking itself with diversity. So I don't know what the guy's records were. I also just feel like, as always happens in these cases, now separately, specifically with the Memphis guys, we haven't heard from them yet. Yeah, the beating looks bad. It looks like it doesn't look like, to me, like proper police training. I don't know what led up to it. It's a little rougher than usual, but in every one of these cases, John Phillips, the initial story turns out to be complete hogwash. Complete hogwash. So, yeah, the beating, I'm with you on the beating. Whether that's a murder charge, I mean, the kid died 4 days later. We don't know why he was pulled over to begin with, but I'm given to believe that they just stopped him for no reason whatsoever. Well, it sort of leaked out here and there, and this seems a little more believable to me that he was driving the wrong way down a street. Well, I'm sorry, that's putting, he could have killed a family. He could have killed little kids, mom and dad driving along, and he's barreling down the wrong way, if that's true. But my point is, we haven't heard the cop's version yet. And I know what the initial version was for, you know, Dante Wright, for George Floyd, for Breonna Taylor. And the facts ended up being 180 degrees different. So I'm kind of reserving judgment on these guys. I did notice yesterday, there may be major updates, and I'm babbling ignorantly today, because I haven't kept up with today's updates. But yesterday's update, I think it's absolutely hilarious. I was wondering how long it would take them to get to this guy. If you saw the videos as they were first released Friday night, and I did, it took like 45 minutes to get to the beating part. And the first one is just at the end of the arrest when Tyre Nichols flees the cops, and the cops have apparently pepper sprayed him. Now, maybe the cops just, you know, pulled him over, knocked on his window, and started spraying him with pepper spray. I'm not going with that. If I had to guess, I would say that's not what happened. They pulled him over for a reason. He resisted arrest, and that's why the pepper spray came out. But if you watch those videos, you know, because of the body cam, the guy whose body cam was being used, every once in a while in the frame, you could see his hands. And those were white hands. Now, there were no white officers that I could see. In the beating segment, he apparently did not go. He just did the initial stop. And I was just thinking, well, they got to get him. Did he do anything wrong? No, but he's white.
I think they did fire him. And we're out of time, and we'll chat again real soon, but always a pleasure. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Good to talk to you, John Phillips. Bye-bye.
You can get Ann online at AnnCoulter.com and follow her on Twitter at AnnCoulter.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.